Stuttering King CIA. George sounds like a great blues musician.
Yeah. Well, he would have been a very good blues musician.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's why he was so annoyed.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, he was and shall remain a scat man.
That's what I is dead. Long live the scat man. From our dusty cellars. With the passing of time, we get older and more conservative, which are two good reasons to start liking status quo. It's the final countdown. Well, I like it, I like it, I like it, I like it. No?
Yeah.
Are you playing music? My earphones are like, yeah, are you playing some actual quo, baby?
The status is that.
Like, I would say, okay, sorry to derail the whole intro, but...
If we have nothing if not our format, Gavin.
We have nothing if not our format. Choosing to be a status quo cover band is the laziest decision that anyone can ever make. It's literally, like, they play three chords a song. Like, I could honestly finish this podcast at 7:30 or whatever, decide to learn guitar and be in a status quo cover band by midnight. Honest to God, it is so easy. If you're in a status quo cover band, fuck you. If you're in status quo, you're doing all right.
I like it.
Pictures of Matchstick Man has four chords in it. Funny enough, they don't really play that one live. See, the setup is you need three chords and the truth.
Mm.
Not that's what, you know... That's what the quo always knew. I'm Manus Cronin, joining us this week, as always. He's been described as without equal, which only really tells us he's either the best or the worst. It's Jack Toner.
Thank you. I am a man of extremes of quality.
It's true.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah, who wouldn't? Time spent in his vest correlates directly with the amount of time he spent investing in pyramid schemes. It's Gavin Carberry.
Is the implication there that Gav sits around in like a tank top throwing money at
buying into multi-level marketing schemes? Yes. Those boss babes who contact him.
Now, both of you have been around me to know that I am frequently invests.
Yeah.
But you do not know what I invest in. I'm a big fan of underwear of the top variety.
I got the impression you buy a lot of products that, you know, I don't know if we've discussed this on air before. It's not that if you advertise on a podcast, you're a bad product. And by the way, you know, why not advertise with us? It's, you know, those products that not only advertise on podcasts, but they advertise on all of them.
Yes, yeah. We're talking MeUndies. We're talking Casper. We're talking Quip. We're talking what are the other
Blue
ones?
Blue Chew. Fucking
Blue Apron is one.
And it's like, I am never buying anything from any of you.
See, Manus, I have the opposite. I think that podcast advertising really works on me. Like, now, you know, whenever I listen to NPR, feel like a Sierra Nevada, you know? Mm. Whenever I listen to Slate, I feel like some Laura Jones CBD, you know? I think the whole thing, podcast advertising for me is the most effective form of advertising. And if you want to get involved in the most effective form of advertising... email finalcountdown@gmail.com, just like our good friend.
And we'll probably never get back to you. If the
I hope we email back the person who did email us. We had an email this week and it was the nicest thing we've ever received.
The nice thing we ever received.
We name checked Thomas last week and then I think it's Tomas. I assumed he was Polish. I assumed it was like Thomas. Like, but anyway, he didn't pull me up on it. And I wouldn't have taken kindly to it if he had. So fair play to you.
You know, Matt.
You clearly listened. Yep.
I also realized there, Gavin, you listen to like a higher caliber podcast than I do.
Yeah. Manus is like, you want fleshlights? we got used fleshlights over here.
We got used and we got clean.
Now, the cleans is used, but the used ain't cleans.
Hey, boss, we got clean fleshlights? Yeah, I got clean. I don't think that's exactly what anyone was asking, boss. I kicked my heroin habit, huh? I'm Hollywood sober, which is to say I'm drunk. I don't think it could be Hollywood sober in Queens, boss. Hollywood's full of queens. We live in Queens. We're a classy podcast. Next to the Joe Rogan Experience, my special guest, Alex Jones. It's going to be along in a minute. Yeah, why wouldn't Joe Rogan be from Yonkers?
Where is Joe Rogan from?
I think he's from Boston, but he did live in California. I'm fairly sure he's not there anymore.
He's in Texas now or something, isn't he?
He moved away because of
he moved tyranny. because of taxes.
The tyranny. It was terrible. We call it tyranny. It's only when it's taxing the poor to give to the wealthy that it's fair and just taxing. When it's taxing the wealthy for anything, it is tyranny. Sorry, that's just how I feel about it.
That's just how I and my good friend Joe Rogan feel about it.
Me and the Roganator. Yeah, look at it's but the throw of a dice that I wasn't one of his weird little mates. The other way, he's got that crew.
You'd be very good at being one of his weird mates.
You'd have done great at clinging on to the coattails of Rogan.
Coattails. I think you're right.
Good question. If you could cling on to the coattails of anybody, who would it be?
Okay, is it someone now that we have to decide we're clinging on to and then see where it ends up? Or is it someone...
No. If you could go back, it's someone whose success is like concurrent with our timeline. So like it's someone who's successful now who... If you could go back in time and cling onto their coattails, who would it be? Joe Rogan is a good one. He has a good coterie of sycophants.
He's a great record of bringing his sycophants with him. That's the one thing you will say about him.
I think I'd go Adam Sandler.
Good. Wow. Good. A generation earlier, but he still counts for this, I would say.
Yeah.
That's a great
absolutely. Call. Yeah, 100%. Like, you don't want to go with Bill Gates or any of those guys, because they'll just cut you right loose. They'll take you for what you're worth. And if you complain a little bit too much, they'll have Hillary Clinton shoot you straight in the head. Yeah, the Clinton's taking contracts now, and Gates has got a few. Yeah, and you won't hear her coming. No, you won't.
No, you will not.
The Clinton Wetwork Foundation does really, really great stuff in the assassination field.
You're hoping it's Bill and you just get cummed on.
Yeah. The last thing you'll hear before you die. Oh my God, is that Hillary Clinton coming from your own mouth?
Yeah. It's true. Oh, Hill Dog! What's up? Oh no. Oh, she means business.
What about, okay, this is a deviation from like people who bring their friends along, but what about someone like Schwarzenegger? Someone who had like a much broader career and got much more influential in like other fields. I feel like just being in that ecosystem would probably be pretty cool.
If I was like a housekeeper, for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. If you were looking to get Schwarzenegger's personal assistant. Yeah. Wait, what happened to his housekeeper?
Didn't he duff up his housekeeper?
Well, does that
by
mean...
Which I mean by which I mean impregnate, not... not
okay.
Didn't he do that?
I don't know.
I think you are right. I think that's Arnold's one scandal. Other than all of Pumping Iron, where he just talks about how much he loves coming so much.
He made me want to lift weights because I like to come too, you know.
People are arguing it the wrong way. It's like, you already love coming. Now do the other thing. Instead of like, do the other thing and then you'll get to come more.
It strikes me as less likely that weightlifting for him is like he's coming all the time, because it seems way more likely that what he thinks is coming is just weightlifting.
Yeah.
Like, that's only one error he has to make. He has to make like 50 if he's always feeling like, you know, he's coming. Occam's razor would dictate that it's like, oh, that's what it is. Yeah, that's nothing like that. Oh my god. Man, it's your impression of me is terrible. You only jingled some of the way. And if you've seen my documentary, Pumping Iron, jingle all the way.
Yeah, I think Schwarzenegger is an interesting one.
But is like, he known as Sandler and Rogan are both known for? For, you know, bringing the hood with him, you know, in a white guy. Yeah. So, you know, being guilty and bringing your friends with you. I mean, who has the less talented coterie of entourage types?
It's hard to tell because I think Sandler's came with more mainstream success. Your brain immediately goes to Rogan's, like, as like a murderer's row of talentless hacks who just are clinging to coattails. But then you think about David Spade.
Yeah.
And you've got to be thinking, we've murked Spade once on this podcast.
Schneider, is that his name? Rob Schneider?
Schneider. You've got to be thinking Schneider.
He's gone unmerked on the show, if that's a concern of yours, Gav. We can diversify our sandbaggers.
Yeah, I would argue that both Rob Schneider and David Spade are just over-pushed.
Yeah.
Like, they should absolutely never be a leading man or a leading person in a project. But Sandler has these other guys. Like, I'm not talking about Kevin James and Chris Rock and the rest of the Grown Ups 2 cast. But, like, you know those other Happy Madison guys? Like, the guys from Grandma's Boy, which actually, of a Happy Madison film, wasn't too bad. But, like, the C-tier Happy Madison people who, like, shouldn't have a career, you know?
Interesting.
Shouldn't have... Sorry, okay, I'm going to need some names here because so I can put faces.
I'd love to give them to you. Most of the cast of Grandma's Boy. That's about the only thing I can tell you.
Okay, a film I have never heard of until right now.
Or like the other guys from Big Daddy or The Waterboy. Like the not Jon Stewart, not any of the...
Yeah.
You only see them in Adam Sandler stuff.
Like Kevin Nealon?
Yes.
Yeah, Kevin Nealon's like, I would say... Nick Swardston, right, definitely. Google Nick Swardston and then... Yeah, just go with it. He's in Jack and Jill. This guy's a piece of shit. Sorry. He's not a piece of shit. He's just got a like very successful career not that good.
Yeah. Whereas Kevin Nealon is actually
very talented.
Who is?
Kevin Nealon.
Kevin Nealon. What a bet. He was in Weeds.
Oh, sorry, that wasn't who I was thinking of at all.
You're thinking of Nick Swartzen.
Yeah, you're thinking of Nick Swartzen. And like, yeah, you're definitely thinking of Nick Swartzen. Like, and everybody who wasn't thinking about Nick Swartzen at this time needs to Google Nick Swartzen and just think, yeah, Nick Swartzen.
Like, there is not one of you listening who, if your best buddy was Adam Sandler, couldn't be Nick Swartzen or whatever his name is. I'm picturing him in my head. Like, I could see his face.
Yeah. Yeah.
Peter Dante is another one. Yeah.
Yes, Peter Dante.
God, man, this is such a fucking treasure trove of talentless hacks.
Yeah. What about... Because
Judd Apatow.
I think those people are good though. I was going to say Johnny Knoxville.
It didn't turn out great for a lot of them. I'm going to be real with you.
It didn't.
And I don't think what was stopping any of us doing a lot of that stuff was like a lack of being friends with Johnny Knoxville. I bet he has loads of friends. He was like, "Hey, like, come out and do my thing. We got to get kicked in the balls, electrocuted, bitten by crocodiles." And they went, "No."
Yeah.
Your life will be very much one thing, but it'll be great, and you'll have more money than if you didn't do it. Probably.
I don't think Bam Margera ever having any success was good for him. I don't.
Yeah. Agreed. Mm. He needed to fail early, and move on. I think
he needed a little bit of what I got, frankly. He needed a series of like just no, and then at the age of like 31, God, fuck it. I guess it's not gonna happen for old Bam.
Mattis, right now, right this second, would you swap your life for Bam Margera's?
No, not even.
No, not even. Even a bit. No, no one would. No one would.
And like,
what am I, me in Bam Margera's life, or am I Bam Margera in Bam Margera's life?
Well, you might be you, but you've got all those years of substance abuse problems. Like, they don't.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, no. Then yeah, you're right. You're right.
You're kind of not you anymore after you do that for long enough. Is part of the problem with it.
It's yeah. Like, no. You're absolutely spot on.
Yeah.
Like Steve-O got out of it, but like Steve-O's whole life is recovery now as well. So like.
Yeah.
Like, I'd rather be Steve-O than Bam, but I'd really rather not have to go to AA meetings forever as well. That'd be cool if that could be avoided. Because they're all alcohol there, as far as I understand.
Yeah.
Go to drink it all. I mean, I don't know. Like... That's an interesting one. Has Judd Apatow brought any talentless hacks along?
Good question. Like,
this
yeah,
Judd Apatow. Good, like...
Okay, let's go to the freaks. Martin Starr is pretty good, I think. Although, of all of them, potentially he just like he gives me Remy Malek vibes, which is, are you a good actor or are you just a bit weird looking?
Are you just weirding me out? Yeah,
you know, that's how I felt watching Remy Malek in the latest Bond. Is like, this isn't a good performance, but you're weird enough looking to pull it off.
Yeah, it's like I'm really drawn to looking at you for some reason. Like,
yeah.
That is what it is. So, like, while, like, if you're a Seth Rogen, it's great that you were friends with Judd Apatow.
Probably would have been, like, Seth Rogen wrote, like, obviously he updated it, but, like, he wrote Superbad when he was 16. Like, yeah, so Seth Rogen was gonna be famous.
He was gonna, that's what I'm saying. So, like,
look at who that crew is.
Wait, Sam Levine, maybe?
Sam Levine is.
See, that might be part of the problem. Is I don't think. He was in Freaks and Geeks, wasn't he? He was kind of perfect for that one part, and then nothing else really.
And actually, in fairness to Judd Apatow, cut him loose. There's not a lot of Judd Apatow in his IMDb.
What I was going to say about Sam Levine when I realized who it was that you were talking about is that like you kind of don't you did have to. I had to Google it. Like I had to go.
I actually think that Judd Apatow just surrounds himself with great people.
That's exactly how it seems. Like, Freaks and Geeks is a fucking murderer's row of, like, talented...
Of success.
Comedy stories, drama of success. Like, Seth Rogen, Jason Segel, James Franco, Linda Cardellini is also feckin' deadly and seems like she's in more.
And she's still buzzing around doing that.
She's still buzzing around. She's deadly. Martin Starr, similarly, like, yeah, he's and then he found like Jonah Hill, Michael Cera.
Yeah, I mean, like I think you could put me in any of their positions, and it wouldn't really help me very much, you know.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Like,
yeah, being around wouldn't have made it just happen. Yeah.
Whereas, like, you know, I think there are probably none of Joe Rogan's crew that wouldn't have a career at all. But there's a bunch of them who would just be playing clubs and like you'd never.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
There's a bunch of them playing like big theaters that wouldn't be.
Could you say something similar for the Dave Chappelle crew?
Who would you be thinking about? Like Darnell Rawlings or?
Darnell is one.
Charlie Murphy or?
Probably not Charlie Murphy. I think he probably would have been. He was surrounded by enough stuff that would have got him in the doors of enough places.
Yeah. You forget.
Really,
the,
like, it's just like, really, it's just Rollins, isn't it?
you forget. Like Bill Burr was a Dave Chappelle guy.
True, actually.
Oh yeah.
But again, I mean, it was someone like him was only a matter of time. Either way, I don't know. Like I don't. Okay, you couldn't drop me in Bert Kreischer's spot and have it work because he has his own weird thing that people like for some reason. I don't get it personally.
Like, yeah. But I rewatched his like The Machine, like 7 minutes or whatever. And like when I was younger, I thought that was so funny. And like, they're a joke to be seen.
Oh yeah, there's not. There's no jokes.
There's
in
no
it.
Joke.
Which is probably says a lot for him as a personality. I bet you'd love him. He must be like really sound.
Yeah. Like. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, in a way that it would be really being the way he is. He's obviously able to be to where people like him. So, I don't know. I feel like we're being really mean to Joe Rogan's crew because like. Who else is in it? Like Tom Segura?
Tom Segura would not have, like, he'd be a club comedian if it wasn't for Joe Rogan. I think you're right. I don't think that he would, like, you know, be working in fucking an office somewhere. I think that he would, yeah. But, like, he wouldn't have the success he has. Are we thinking, like, we're thinking film, we're thinking comedy. Like, I think music, it's kind of harder to get away with.
Sort of.
Oh, sorry. Any member of D12. If you're in Eminem's coterie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
that's
I mean, I'm still waiting for that bizarre solo album to come out. You know?
Yeah. Actually, no, I suppose, yeah, anyone in, like, hip hop, like, entourages are such a thing in hip hop.
Mm.
That's probably like, you have to pick a space, like an industry. That's probably the one. Bringing people along for the ride is such a thing, yeah.
But like, normally the proper, like, just in the entourage guys, they don't get to, like, really, like, Puffy's entourage don't get to, like, be in a group with Puffy and do, like, an album.
Oh, I'm not, hey, the question wasn't how do you get the most famous, it's whose coattails can you be on?
Okay, yeah, well, yeah, sure. I just think it morphed into like who's actually like you're like
who would have been successful anyway. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
You're right. We did drift from what the original question was.
Yeah. Then I suppose. Yeah, Puffy's would be like an excellent choice. Like you kind of think any like Drake's. Crew are probably having the fucking time of their life. Although they do have to spend a lot of time with Drake, which would fucking suck.
I'm willing to bet that you don't need to spend as much time with Drake as you think you might. There's probably a lot of stuff.
As you do squashing rumors about him. I get what being in Drake's entourage is about. If he were gay, there'd be no problem. No, what he has is a romantic abnormality. See, what I said was he sleeps with the fishes.
Are we going to look back on the Drake rumors, just be like, fuck dog, this was like Cosby. This was like...
I don't know.
We're making jokes about it now, but like, somebody stop the man.
Like, on the one hand, like, you'd think, yeah, those type of rumors nearly always turn out to be true in the end. But on the other hand, it's like, it's 2021 now. Like, these things are coming out when they happen, you know? So I have to think, like, there certainly was a time when people were, maybe people still are, where, like, the people like that in the music industry did whatever they liked, and nothing came out until they were dead. If we were lucky, it came out then.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the done thing anymore.
No. And I suppose with things like the Cristiano Ronaldo and the fact that I can't remember her name is pretty damning. The rape allegations against Cristiano Ronaldo happening while he is like the best paid star, football star in the world, the most Instagram followers, the, you know, by all accounts, one of the most famous people in the world, is kind of an indication that we've come a bit further. So yeah, maybe like,
I mean, I'm not saying they'd be in jail necessarily, but like, but that it is at least discoverable if you have a mind to, you know.
Yeah. No, that's a very good point, Manus.
Mightn't seem like much of a fucking road to
distinction.
But when you consider that, like, previously, if you said something, you had to just go around, and like people go, "You're crazy and you're lying." Whereas if you say it now. Someone who's not willfully saying you're crazy and you're lying can go and look it up and go, okay, well, like, it, you know, there might be gray area here, gray area there, but it's not, she's not crazy.
Yeah.
But she's not coming from
yeah.
nowhere. Like, there's any reasonable person, I don't know. I hope it's such a small little way to get better, but I guess it's better than being worse, isn't it?
Mm, yeah, exactly. Like, small progress is progress.
So I don't know. Drake's probably Drake is certainly in the clear, is what I'm saying. And anything anyone says about him is and Drake, what I'm Drake, also saying,
if you're looking for a member to just hang on, you know, I feel like you've got a lot of cool people around.
A lot of people out there asking questions, not enough people finding a way to make it a yes. Yes, men. That's what I'm after.
Elvis had a lot of yes men, and look how he turned out. King of rock and roll, baby. What are you the king of, Drake? Not fucking Toronto.
Toronto, I guess.
Toronto, yeah.
Rock and roll,
there.
Toronto. Rock and roll, Toronto.
Yeah, give me point rock made. And roll.
But before we get into any of that, it's time to get introduced to the beers. And this week we have for you an interesting one from the Left Indicator Brewing Company there out of Portland, Oregon. And I think we got this one of the latest Craft Central. It's interesting. It's a Barnyard Farmhouse, which I thought was a contradiction.
I thought that was a building and not an ale.
A tautology,
Barnyard Farmhouse Choco Mint Porter Stout.
They're certainly competing for most beer.
And it's in a 44 milliliter can. This is the smallest can you've ever seen.
It's a feat of engineering.
Yeah, but it's 62%.
I couldn't figure out who we were going to open. It's more animal than man. Interesting. I didn't know how we were going to open this, but it actually comes with a little lever to get the ring fall off, which is good.
Yeah, handy and useful as well for when you get other 44 milliliter cans.
Yeah. So, in short, dear listener, I'm not drinking. Gavin's having white wine, and Jack is.
I think I need to wrestle later, so I don't think I'm going to drink. But I had planned on wrestling. On drinking before wrestling.
Yeah, and I had planned on having actual beer, but my Craft Central order is delayed. I'd say a lot of people ordering for the holidays.
I would imagine so.
Yeah.
I can't figure out if I want my taste and smell to fully come back or not, because like. I guess what I want to do is know if it's coming back for Christmas, because I can save a lot of money on Christmas drink by just buying Budweiser.
Yeah, you can. Like, the last thing you want is for your taste and smell to come back as you're horsing into a Kilkenny cream.
Kilkenny cream.
Oh, here's a joke that was supposed to go into the intros when James was still here. Now, funny enough, I don't know how it was ever going to work as an intro. But you know, Simon Harris has declined an interview with RTE2, stating that we've had RTE1 for years and still haven't found a vaccine for that. Because RTE is the virus and Simon Harris is an idiot. I mean, what am I
going to
say?
I mean, 2-1. It's just a perfect joke.
That's a great joke.
So, Simon, it's still in your inbox. You still can come on the show if you want. And we will... I will walk back anything bad I've ever said about you, because I am a coward.
if what would it be like to be in Simon Harris's coterie? Like to be in his entourage?
Honestly, I think you'd feel a lot of importance. I don't think you'd see a lot of importance in your day-to-day life.
Jack,
don't get
that
the
is...
opportunity to be the alpha male in many of these. I think it might happen with the Simonators somehow. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe when the door gets closed, he's like, right, you cunts. Time to start slaying some pints and some pussy. Because that's what alpha males do.
Yeah,
slaying.
I've heard from some I know. Yeah.
I'm sure Simon Harris has been a TD since he was 25.
That's fucking mad. I mean,
yeah, that's
so wait, like, was
there should probably well, be
and I assume he was a counselor before that. And I assume before that he was in Young Fine Gael.
He was in Young Fine Gael since he was 15. Because like I defended him before, because the usual creatures on Twitter who are actually quite mean. A lot of them, and like they hide behind this veil of being like kind, but they're absolutely not when they disagree with you politically. And disagree with Simon Harris, they do, in fact. But I've defended Simon Harris because they kept putting together, it's ridiculous. He dropped out of college, he doesn't even have a college degree, and he's the Minister for Education. I was thinking, oh, piss off. Is that who you really want running the country? Is people with college degrees only? That somehow you're disqualified? Like,
there's more than one way to be anything. So that's
As if having a college degree makes you one thing or another. You can be pretty fucking stupid.
The only thing it makes you is better. It doesn't make you good.
Yeah, it makes you better than everyone, obviously.
Better than everyone. That's certainly how. Well, that's what they told me in Trinity. They told me that this makes me better than everyone. Yeah.
And I've been acting as such. And
honestly, I'd rather someone who dropped out of Trinity than chose to settle for anywhere else.
Dead right. Oh, fuck, I did both of those. Oh, what are you going to do? There has to be an underclass in Niall of it.
True.
But I used to defend him, and I still defend that point, because that's a stupid way to attack somebody. Now, what I didn't quite realize was that at the age of... it doesn't say what age he was in his Wikipedia, but he dropped out in first year of like a journalism degree in DIT and then went straight into politics. I'm like, oh, he did nothing else. So it's not like one of these like, oh, I didn't go to university. I went to the University of Life. I've fucking working since I was 16. I've been on the fucking factory floor. I've been fucking welding, you know, whatever. Teaching kids how to read, whatever you could be doing. And it's like, oh no, yeah, he went into Young Fine Gael at 15 and then he decided he wanted to be a politician and then that happened for him. God bless him. You know, 25 is too young.
It's too young unless you're actually like a little bit special. Like a little bit have lived a little bit at that point. Like as you have some sort of unique insight or relatively strong view. But if you're like, I just want to be with the party,
it's probably too young anyway.
I kind of is this the the age you should run for president is 35, which seems arbitrary for like an arbitrary.
Oh yeah, I voted. Well, because I voted that we should get rid of that limit, but also that I would in all likelihood never vote for a 20-year-old. So it doesn't matter that we shouldn't decide
our president
who should run based on who we think we would vote for.
Our office for president being what it is why I would like it to not change from 35, because what I would hate for it to start to be is what the Shannon is already, which is like, because obviously it's already sort of although it hasn't been really as much of a retiring ground for former Taoiseach as it used to be.
Just wait till Bernie 2027, baby.
Yeah, I can't wait. And I'll probably go for it too, because I'm a big hypocrite who likes to find a pass every now and again. But... I think my point is that, like, I'd hate to see it where you, like, get in that, like, 20-year-old graduate who, like, you think might be something someday and you try to put them in there or at least give them a run at the oars.
Give them a profile. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and I think that'll be that. As soon as you fucking do that, the sooner that you allow that to happen. Now, we're in a position of, like, real import. Not that it's not important. But we're at a position with executive authority of any description.
Yeah.
Then I think you wouldn't really need that because people wouldn't run people for that reason, and people wouldn't vote for them anyway.
Yeah. That's totally true. Like I think like in every debate you'd have a stick to beat the youngest candidate with, which you don't at the moment because it is, as you said, like a retiring ground for ex-Taoiseach and you know.
Damn. Something like reading bills and figuring out if they need to go to the Supreme Court, which is like their only job. It's like, I don't care how brilliant you are, I'm not having a 20-year-old do that.
That's fair enough.
There's maybe something to the Roman system where, like, okay, obviously the Roman system is perfect, and therefore, and that's why that empire is still going. The Roman system was perfect, but they had like a thing where, like, you would. You know, you when you would go into the Senate first, and then you would be like there's steps. So you at a certain age, you could be a quester, and you couldn't be an aedile until you'd been a quester, or you couldn't be. I can't remember what order any of these go in, or whatever what any of them did. But anyway, the tip of the pyramid was the consul, and by the time you were consul, like they'd weeded out a lot of the people who were gonna be one way or another. And again, that system is perfect. No, you're right. I wouldn't feel very comfortable saying a TD has to be. And I think once you can vote, you should probably be able to run to be TD. But I wonder if we shouldn't be saying, okay, but you get 10 years. Wherever you choose to use those 10 years, if you want to start them when you're 18, fine. But like, you know, but then do you want to be retired and not able to be a TD again when you're 28? I don't think you do. Yeah.
Sorry, wait, Manus. I think there was a delay. I missed the start of that, so I missed the entire point. Is like you only get 10 years to be a TD, like in total, in your career.
Yes. Or maybe like depending on what you could put certain benchmarks in there or whatever. Like maybe if you're,
if you get to ministry,
it's year 9 and then you're in the cabinet, then it's like, well, okay, well you get your 5 years or you get your that government term to do that or whatever.
Yeah.
Just as it would make people think, it's like, yeah, I could go and I can look at political party A, which I'm trying not to call Sinn Féin at the moment, but let's, just see like, okay, they're desperately short of candidates and literally that a tree stump would get elected on Sean Crowe's at the moment, and so you get anytime you get a big tide like that, you get funny people in TDs who they never expected to be, and like, so it would make somebody think, it's like, do I want to go in that way or do I want to wait to where maybe I might actually get to cabinet or I might actually get to whatever. This is probably a ridiculous point.
My thinking on this is kind of gone back and forth over the years in that, like, yes, I believe that like any significant, like 30 years in the Dáil is going to if not corrupt, certainly skew someone's ability to make a decision about, the wider population. However, you like every job, you do get better at it over time.
True.
So like there's a balance there to be found. And yeah, I think like weeding out the weeding out your Mick Wallaces essentially is like what I want to do while keeping the kind of like harder working, more kind of ambitious, ambitious on one side of the political spectrum or the other, who have like good ideas about a way to put forward a conservative or a more liberal agenda, like. The fact is, like, there are people in there who are completely bereft of ideas and who are just making noise and wasting everyone's time and a lot of fucking money, Like, yeah, so I do go back and forth on that, like, maybe 10 years and, like, there is... But, like, with 10 years, you need, like, a really engaged citizenry, like, who are essentially ready to hit the ground running after, like, year 1 or 2,
But you keep in mind as well that like that 10 years, that's, and first of all, that's an arbitrary number. I don't know what the number would be.
No.
Better people than me would sit down. No, actually, I'll figure it out. Not better people than me. I'm exactly the level of expertise you want to throw at this. Get me 2 drinks and a beer mat and I'll figure this out. But like, okay, 10 years is 10 years in a row if you're in a cartel party and you're getting elected that way, where like it doesn't matter who you are. But if you're in one of the smaller parties, 10 years could be 20 years, really. I mean, because you're getting turfed out every second go or whatever,
Yeah. That's fair enough. And
I don't know. Nothing's going to be perfect, but there's just a load of spoofers in there. And I'm not sure 40 years experience, if you went in there at 22 with no experience at all, and you, like, it's like, Jack, how much more you improve in your wrestling when you're in there wrestling with a guy who's better than you?
Oh, yeah. If you have two people if you have a term limit of 7 years and 7 years, the maximum possible experience you can be learning from is someone with 7 years experience, which is not enough. The maximum combined experience you can really have in the room at any one time is 14 years experience, which is also not enough.
Well, that's true. So that, but then I also think of like,
but yeah, so your other point is like having super experienced people around less experienced people is a massive accelerator to a learning curve.
But, is that not what the civil service is for?
Well, the permanent government, yes, I would say so. And then, frankly, could do with a touch of reform its own self. Obviously, it's 99%.
You're right, gap term limits are in fact essential. Get all these people back out into private industry.
Obviously, it's 99% perfect. I'm not certain people should be going into the civil service at 18 and then never doing anything else either. I'm not sure that's a great idea. And that really does happen. And I suppose my corollary point, Jack, to the thing where you want experienced people working with less experienced people and such, you're also probably aware of stepping into the ring with someone who's nominally way more experienced than you. They've had way more matches and they've been around for years. But it becomes very obvious within a few minutes that, like, oh, they've been having way more matches with the same level guys. That's like the guy who went into the Dáil at 22, you know, with no base experience whatsoever and just sat there. And he's accumulated 30 years of experience, but it's not worth a shit.
Measuring experience in years is only a vaguely useful roughing up kind of.
Yeah, yeah, you'll be right more than you're wrong, but it's.
I think that it would be better to obviously people should have like a level of experience before they go into the Dáil. But how many years as a barrister is enough? That's my question. Is like.
What are the big professions you get in there? Barristers for sure.
Teachers.
Teachers.
Teachers in the Shannon more than the Dáil, I would say.
Neil Martin's a teacher. Neil Martin's a teacher. I'm struggling to think at the moment. Noreen O'Sullivan, the Minister for Education.
I think we just had a good string of Taoiseach who were teachers. So it's really colored the overall conversation.
I know there's a lot of teachers.
It's 3 months of campaigning that like they're not sitting in a classroom and sending their kids home with leaflets.
That's true. Leaflets and trophy boxes. And hey, if they happen to mix up the two a little bit, that's a few more ching chings in the pocket. You know what I mean?
Few more posters up around the town.
Never mind, this will still be here in 5 years' time. My campaign for the Dáil in South Leitrim is only going to be here once. And Leitrim people, you are welcome for suggesting that you as a county are big enough to split into two constituencies. You're welcome for that. So I don't know. Also, it's one of those jobs you can keep while you're in there.
Yeah.
So, you know, that matters less by the time you're end of Kenny, but like if you're potentially going to be a one-term guy, you know, don't even qualify for the pension properly, it's nice to have a job you can come back
to. It's nice, exactly. Yeah.
It barely pays enough for a good barrister to want to do it. I wonder Michael McDowell did it, and I think he's happier back where he is now. Well, he's in the Shannon now, but he can still practice as well.
Yeah, yeah. You'd want to have banked a lot of your barrister money. To take a good run at
being and it is really tough. Like, and it is it's tough to get that much money stolen from your clients into your own bank account. It's tough. No barrister ever did that. No barrister ever did that. That never happens. Please don't sue us.
Manus, have you made the point, I think, on the podcast before that our TDs and our Taoiseach just aren't paid enough?
Probably not.
Yeah.
They certainly are is in a halfway house because they're paid well. Yeah. They're paid too much to be good value, but not enough to tempt like the top people away from doing anything else. Like, why couldn't we afford like $2 million a year for the Taoiseach? I don't know what the number would be. It's nothing in terms of the exchequer, and it's the most important job in the country, at least in theory.
Yeah. Like. Yeah, I feel like you can go a lot. You can the kind of going rate of like a CEO or whatever because of like the level of power as well. And I think anyone who's striving for that level is like enamored by the power as much as by the money. But I do think we need to go high enough that like people aren't, I don't know, tempted to like, take things on the side or like, you know, line up a job afterwards or whatever it may be.
That's the thing that I think it's like, yes, I actually don't mind that someone would maybe swap the monetary ambition for the fact that they want a bit of power. You have to pretend like you don't want it, but do you really want to land someone with a load of power who doesn't want it at all? I mean, I guess that's the democratic ideal, and you'd love to just get and every politician would love to be able to go, I absolutely refuse, and have everyone beg him, and then he would do it. Like that's what you would love to have, but secretly because you'd love it. But my worry is that a lot of the craving for that power is a roundabout craving for money, and you want the power so that you can set things up so that you can get a nice job afterwards. So I don't know. I don't know what you want the number to be. I just think.
Have I told you guys about my my friend who shall remain nameless because this is, I don't know if it's damning, who has an amazing theory about Leo Varadkar that he spelled out quite clearly in what I can only describe as a manifesto.
I think you might have had this on the program before, but let's go with it.
I think we can't, obviously
the rule is we can never repeat anything on this program.
Yeah.
Nothing ever gets said twice.
Leo, there's 30. Okay, gimme. We're getting close. Soon. Actually, this
just
is
before Gavin gets a chance to actually bring up this point about myself, Leo Varadkar, both not part of the government and as well, of course, in the government at the same time. Perhaps.
Okay, I've got it.
Thanks, Leo.
Thanks for filling that time, Leo.
Thank you very much.
Mean girls, eight words when none would have done.
Discuss this. My high level theory is that when he was a closeted nerd, see images of him in college, he was like, I want to be a politician, twitch. But now he's discovered being a gay slut and doesn't give a fuck about being a politician, but it's how he earns money to be a gay slut and buy rank expensive sunglasses and rank ES collection tees. So he has to stay in the job now. Probs isn't fucked retraining back into medicine. And then we'll get more slutty job lobbying soon and be constantly on gay sojourns around the continent.
Yeah.
Like, it makes a lot of sense.
It does.
Lifestyle inflation is a real thing.
And like, you know, discovering yourself when you're discovering, you know, or coming out when you are a politician and then like getting to live like your most authentic life must have been absolutely amazing, except for the fact that he had to be Taoiseach.
At the same time, it sort of explains why he kind of doesn't mind getting caught in the odd, like, not like detrimental to your real life scandal, but like people are still like, here, I'm flouting regulations, having cans in the Phoenix Park. I'm here at a music festival. Doesn't kind of mind getting caught doing that. Fair enough. I get it.
Yeah.
Perspective Leo is probably also a pretty significant thing there. Yeah.
It's like he's this doctor, right? And he is a legit doctor.
Yeah.
He finished medical school in 2003 and he's been a TD since 2007. He's a doctor for like 4 years max. So he's got way more experience than most people who end up, you know, that young. You know, if you're going to end up being a TD at like 27 or 28, which I think he was, he has more life experience than most 28-year-olds would have at the age of 28. But I don't know. I don't know if he just seems old, comes across as older than he is. A young Fine Gael will do that to you.
I think he does. Yeah, definitely.
To where I just sort of had it that he had this like bank of like years working like as a GP, and he just didn't. God bless him. God bless Leo. Can't wait to have him back as Taoiseach. Then everything will be better. Not Micheál Martin. Micheál is not funny.
It's maybe the funniest thing that's ever been said, and we're very lucky that it's been said as many times as it has.
That's the thing, because a lot of people would be reluctant to say, that's the real bravery of it, is saying it like 500 times.
That's it, exactly.
Me and Michelle met a real life Micheál couple when we were away like last summer. And they like thought it was the funniest thing in the whole world. And like they were like, Micheál, did you hear? She calls him Micheál. Like as if she'd come up with it first of all. Like, even if the person who came up with that, by the way, isn't taking credit for it. So you know what? You might as well take credit for it.
Micheál Martin.
That's like me trying to come up with a fucking intro and like the Zoom link is already there on the screen and I haven't written one yet.
That would never happen.
No, it wouldn't.
Yeah. Come on, Manus. Give us a realistic example.
Yeah, come on. Something that would actually happen. You know. Yeah. So what I'm saying is, pay them all $2 million a year, cut them off after 10 years, and let Leo just go live his best life and go to like whatever he thinks a good time would be. Phone parties, I reckon. I reckon he still thinks that's cool because he went into the Dáil in 2007.
You need to go back to 2007 and think of what was cool then. And Manus, you're absolutely right. It was a phone party.
It was a phone party.
Just let him wear his Hollister shorts at that foam party.
Cracking out the imperial leather, are we?
I went to
are people still party. Into Tiesto? Is that still?
I'm more of a bass hunter guy myself.
He can't find any. He can't find anyone who sells yokes anymore. He's going to be fucked.
I definitely told this on the podcast before, but I went to a foam party in City Bar during Freshers Week and genuinely thought I was going to drown because the foam was above head height. I'm like, it's quite difficult to breathe in foam. You need to like create an area for yourself.
Yeah, foam is not like, it probably won't drown you, but it ain't good for you.
No, it doesn't feel right.
Foam, you're sure going to be tasting a lot of soap all week.
If foam's coming into your lungs or coming out of your lungs, it's not a happy time for you.
No, yeah. It is not.
Fish can't swim in foam. We can't breathe it. It's just a bad quasi.
Bad vibe.
It's a bad time. It's a bad time.
So we figured it out here in the Fine Out Count. And we said several times during our plan for fixing politics that the finer details will be figured out by us at a later date. And it will. And we will tell you just as soon as the government and NFET release their plan for safe nightclub reopening. We'll tell you then. All right? Which will be about 4 or 5 years after we've implemented it. And then we'll tell you what the plan, then we'll tell you what the plan was. Because you'll notice here, we have Jack Toner here. He's here for a reason.
Exactly.
Our Minister of Plan was.
Minister of Plans.
The agenda for episode one all this time.
Yeah. Minister of explaining after the fact what the plan was and why, in fact... The great thing about explaining it later is you can sort of figure out what it's like doing your contents page last.
Yeah, yeah.
You can figure out what happened and then say that was the plan. Works out perfect. We're going to do that. We were going to talk about the Formula One. I don't know that we have a sure fit of time. I know Gavin's doing butt time.
Yeah, that's right. Nowhere to be. All the time in the world.
All the time in the world to be there. It was fun, very exciting Formula One end this year.
That it's exciting again.
It is very good that it's exciting again. I will note, people were being very, the papers were being very generous to Lewis Hamilton today. They were saying he graciously accepted his defeat. And I would just like to point out that that was after they appealed twice to the stewards and are still going to appeal to the Court of Arbitration for Sport.
That's so the like, team. Lewis was very gracious.
Lewis shook his hand. He's accepting it. He's really gracious. He's being gracious.
He did accept. In like his post-race interview, he was like, yeah, fair fucks to Max.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he I sure hope for Max's sake that none of our various legal challenges work, you know.
And like, you know, fair fucks to Lewis, I say, is like, of course, like winning is winning, even if it's after like an appeal. Like,
I'm all for appealing.
And it's also, it's not Lewis's fault that like the papers are like, oh, this British champion who has absolutely,
I understand that it's had the victory
stolen from him by this European banana straightener.
I understand that it's not Lewis Hamilton's fault. And that when Lewis Hamilton is retired from racing, I will probably like him. In the same way that now I find it very difficult to dislike Damon Hill. And the reason I disliked him when he was racing was because of the same fucking reason that I will continue to dislike every British sports person forever, except for when the media turn on them and then I love them. Like, I didn't like David Beckham as much as I should until they completely turned on him.
Yeah, it's like you hate everyone except Mo Salah. You're like a big fan of that guy.
Yeah.
No, but I think it's specifically British. It's like Harry Kane, for example, seems like a really nice guy.
Oh yeah.
However, he does not seem as nice as the media make him out to be, because they honestly think he is Christ crucified on the fucking cross.
It's and it's not his fault, but I can't bring you know what
makes
can
me
I
love
do?
Raheem Sterling. Oh, maybe it's that fucking guy. Hate
you, that's you, it. Sorry, I got the name of my footballers wrong. Is that the guy who like does really nice things for people, and then the media is like, he's a cunt.
I think that's Marcus Rashford.
I think Raheem Sterling just hasn't done anything wrong, and they say he's a cunt. I don't think he's done anything like, you know, it's like, I don't think nothing about Harry Kane or Marcus Rashford makes me think they're that different in terms of being sound.
Yeah,
but
however, the media.
the British media are it's a particular time for British media, and they do and
it is, it's the red tops, it's the fucking tabloids.
And Lewis Hamilton gets that treatment, and consequently, through no fault of his own, he has bothered me forever. But Damon Hill did too. That's what I was forced to remember as I was watching the coverage, and there's Damon Hill like talking away, and I was like, I'm pretty sure he lives in Dalkey. Like, I'm pretty sure he even lives here. And like, and he seems sound. And there was I cheering for Michael Schumacher over him at every turn, but cheering for John
Michael
Lacy,
Schumacher,
cheering for, you know,
definitely
Jack Villeneuve, all these guys. Yeah. And I like think of fuck you, Damon Hill. I'm like, these are probably not very nice guys. I'm certain Eddie Irvine isn't sound. So, you know, it's just one thing. But it did remind me of them. And so, look, I'm all for appealing, but you don't actually get credit then for being gracious and accepting it. I'm reminded of Paul Galvin when he was red carded in, I think it was an All-Ireland semi-final, for slapping the notebook out of a referee's hand. And like, he at the end of it all, when he got his, like, six-game ban or whatever he got, although the GAA like to work in weeks, so you can end up, like, missing no match, because it's the GAA after all. At the end of it all, the big PR line was, look, Paul is holding his hands up, and look, he's taking his punishment like a man. And this is after months of going through every appeal known to man and swearing blind that he hadn't done anything wrong. And finally, when the top court in the land, whatever such court was, whether it was whatever appeal, finally said, no, Paul, you really have been a bold boy here. He went, well, I'm going to put my hands up and take my punishment like a man, you know? And the media were like, yeah, fair play, Paul Galvin. Good man yourself. Right to appeal and all.
You can't get, like, that is literally having your cake and eat it. Well, not literally.
You don't get to then say, I pled guilty the whole time, to save the taxpayer money.
Your Honor, at the end of this lengthy and expensive trial, and after the jury has rendered their verdict, I would still like credit for my early guilty plea. Is that a goer? Oh, this is the Irish court, so it is. Excellent.
Excellent. Fantastic.
Black out in 3 months. Thank that, judiciary. So very, very exciting Formula One. It was back on terrestrial television, which I think we pointed out, because you guys were into Drive to Survive on Netflix, right?
I'm not. Jack is. I was
watching F1 since I was a baby. So.
So was I. But then when it stopped being on terrestrial TV, I just stopped.
I didn't
go and pay DAZN or whoever has it.
Yeah. The current head of sport at RTE is Declan McBennett is his name. He's a very smart guy, really like into sport, very into television. He was in news for ages. But he did a talk that I was at about the idea of audience versus revenue as like a model that some sports have gone down versus others. So like Formula One is an example of one that like sold all their rights to Sky and like lost a huge audience in the UK and in Ireland, certainly. And then now are trying to claw it back with marketing ploys such as Drive to Survive and the occasional game on terrestrial television. Cricket is very similar. They sold all their rights to Sky. Football seems immune because football's too big.
Football is the game par excellence, if you will, for whatever country. So yeah, they'll bring their audience with them. You can do the revenue over audience model if you're football.
And also it makes sense for places like pubs to do it at that point, because like there's so much of it and there's so many people into it. Like there was an F1 pub, I probably drink there a lot of Sundays, but there's just not.
Yeah. Yeah. Where and like there's kind of an argument, like horse racing has pretty much exclusively stayed on terrestrial television because like that their audience profit. would not move.
No, they wouldn't. Their profit model is different anyway. I mean, it's so entwined with the gambling and so you're right, but
he just made a lot of interesting points about, like, you know, if you're the owner of a sport, if you are Formula One as an organization, if you are, you know, URC, if you are World Rugby, whatever. What's the end goal? You know, is the end goal for like you to make a lot of money, like for the players to recognize that, for them to be paid a lot more, for everyone up the chain to just be paid a lot more, and like that's it? Or is it to get people interested in the sport? And like Formula One, I feel like is the kind of thing that could have gone to Sky because like Formula One is so elitist anyway. But something like cricket, like, doesn't necessarily need to be, you know, like on, you know, and something like GAA as well, which has sold partial rights to the, to Sky, doesn't need to be anyway. So like, I don't know. Yeah. Like at the end point, like are like all of these organizations purely profit making endeavors, or is there anything like the GAA, which like,
I think the GAA is an interesting one because there's a difference
to grow the sport.
Yeah, because I think it's an interesting difference between a lot of these organizations that it's like there's a difference between the sport and the league. The sport is football and the Premier League is a private enterprise.
Yeah.
Which is motivated to make profits. There is motorsport and then there is Formula One run by the FIA, a brand of motorsport that is, you know, has shareholders and is like obliged to make money. So it's a weird one. Like the GAA for me is completely obvious that they should be trying to get it in front of as many people as possible. And unless the extra money they're getting from taking it away from those eyes is directly being used to keep people in the sport and fund the progress of the sport through financial means, like funding clubs, which maybe it does. That's the only way that can be justified. But for everything else, we got to remember they're businnesses of sport, not sports with businesses.
That's very true, Jack.
This like the idea of the like profit versus grow the sport model, it's really profit now versus grow the sport, because I mean ultimately if you fail to grow the sport and stagnate, eventually you go backwards, and eventually it's a house of cards and you can't sell rights fees forever when no one's watching it,
like cricket, I would say in the UK, certainly, like in India, in Bangladesh, in Australia, cricket is still like, you know, huge, like
sure. Well, I would argue that F1 have kind of figured out that they went too far the other way. So with Drive to Survive, Drive to Survive is doing the same thing The Ultimate Fighter did for the UFC. But part of the thing about that was Ultimate Fighter was needed because UFC hadn't been on television. They were desperate to get on television. And they really needed to explain to people what the sport was and get them invested into the characters in it and everything because it was so niche. Like it was, by the time Ultimate Fighter came on, like, the original UFC was like basically nothing. Bob Meyerowitz sold it to Lorenzo Fertitta for like $1 million or something. Like it wasn't. But F1 was like huge. Everyone knew about F1 because it was on terrestrial TV. And then it was like, and now they're basically having to re-Ultimate Fighterize it. And
maybe it's just a boom bust cycle where it's just like you plant and then you harvest.
Yeah, but you're creating that. But like, who's to say that you'll happen upon Drive to Survive, or that like by the time you put it on Channel 4 for one race, that it'll just so happen to be the most exciting race in forever, and we all happen to be talking about it. Now you might argue that maybe the stewards did everything they could to make it as exciting as possible. I don't know. I wonder.
I hear that Drake was up in that box.
I heard he
having
was
having some sexual dalliances.
Actually, hearing the great interview with Stormzy, who was credited as celebrity and musician.
He's a celebrity and he's a musician. They're separate. However,
Jerry Horner, formerly Jerry Halliwell, was only credited as songwriter and musician.
She's not a celebrity anymore. She changed her name to Horner. That was her first problem. She shouldn't have married Tim. He was a shit wrestler and he's a shit husband. Can I ask you, Gavin, when you were at that talk, did the person giving it mention any correlation between the inclination towards the profit now model?
Yes.
And whether a fund of some sort has an interest in the sport?
They didn't actually mention that, no. But that is really interesting because the same fund that owns a good portion of Formula One also owns a good portion of what is now the United Rugby Championship.
This is what was percolating, because I don't know like what story with cricket is. I don't know what the story with most of these are. But it strikes me that profit now, I can't worry about later, even if it might result in a boom bust cycle or whatever, and even if it might result in the sport being worse. That sounds like something an investment fund would have to do, even if it didn't really want to.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. Yeah. And I can't remember. I used to know the name of the fund. It's like Capital V6 or something. I don't know.
I can't remember.
It's something like that. Anyway, yeah. But yeah, that's interesting. And it's interesting as well that like the same fund that took Formula One from Channel 4 and terrestrial television and put it on Sky, or just sold it to Sky for like huge amounts of money, has taken the Pro 14 and given it to RTE, like, and TG Cahir, where like,
because ultimately they're facing a huge problem if their investors are knocking down their door going, but there's money now, we need, and then you've, and what you don't want to get, you don't want to get in America to be an SEC thing, wouldn't it, if you were seen to have been in not degradation, whatever, something, the thing where you don't do it, of your fiduciary responsibility, you know, where it's like, what are you mean you deliberately made less? Like, what are you doing, pal? Yeah. You know?
You could be
dereliction was the word I was looking for. Sorry.
You could be legitimately sued in that case, which is a weird place to be. Yeah.
I think the issue, not the issue, but like the benefit or the upside of the URC is like nobody is fucking watching the Pro 14 anyway, bud. It's not money now or
no, that's
later.
True.
It's nothing now or audience later.
Or audience later. Yeah, it's true. And the ultimate rugby championship is an interesting way that they've taken it as well. I think encasing the field in an octagon.
Yeah.
8 teams playing at the same time in an enormous pitch.
Who doesn't?
And the winner is Dan Levy for some reason.
Full Modo Dan Levy. Who doesn't want to, whenever you see those like handbags, pushy, grabby fights, who doesn't want everyone to go in a cocky style? Okay, stop now. Okay, you want to do that? Okay. Bring down the octagon.
I would watch the fucking shit out of that because of how many scrum halves started.
Yeah. Really?
Because of how many shitty little...
Go ahead, sir.
And if you win, the loser is just out for out for 10 minutes. That's it.
There'd be a lot less Jemison Gibson Park on Dwayne Vermeulen confrontations.
Absolutely.
That was the rule. Yeah. And I think the United Rugby Championship is the place to bring that in, because like you said, what have you got to lose?
Exactly. What have you got to lose? No one's watching it anyway, lads.
And if you're coming up against a team of particularly big bruisers, you don't want to risk your like internationals, fine. Leinster have a big academy.
To that slaughter.
You know, it's a proving ground, and you will prove that your academy, you know, you've got to get the wheat from the chaff somewhere. It's much easier than having a conversation with a 22-year-old and going, you know, I think this might not be the career for you. Maybe talk to one of our career advice people. We'll all sort everything out. You can just go, no, it's like, hey, good news, you're starting the weekend. But you are playing the Waikato Dana Whites. and here are your academy friends who are going out with you. You'll notice none of them are Brock Lesnar, none of them are Cain Velasquez, so I think you can kind of figure this out. But if you want to go ahead. No, the contract is still here for you. Do we just always get into talking about the business of sport and how we'd fix it at this time of the year? Like, didn't we do the same thing like this time last year? It was like, I know how to market the dubs. I think we need to do this.
Yeah.
And it always comes down to, well, we need to have them put more promos on each other. We need to have a
fight. Basically, how can we make every sport wrestling?
How can we make... Because every sport should be wrestling, but the outcome isn't fixed.
Yeah, like, the real parts, like, take all the razzmatazz bits, like, build the rivalries, make me care.
Yeah. I think the problem is if you commit yourself to that level of elite sport, you kind of have to shave down a lot of your personality, Good Boy Academy will tell you.
The Good Boy Academy will tell you that. It's true, but it's trade-offs, and we know that. You can't be the fastest and the strongest, and the same, those 10,000 hours or whatever amount of hours it is that you spent kicking the ball to make so your leg can kick the ball really well, like better than anyone to the point that you paid for it. That's 10,000 hours that you didn't spend doing what we're doing, which is just sharpening our already razor sharpens. Iron sharpens.
God, if it got any sharper, I honestly would cut myself on it.
People who listen to us for any length of time often do feel like they want to cut themselves. I don't know. I don't know why that's seen as an insult, because iron sharpens iron, and we are sharp, sir. We are sharp. We're the sharpest knives in the world.
Exactly.
Don't use us to make your sandwich.
What do we think of this? Nothing.
How was the wine, Gavin? Have you still got all your senses?
To be honest, I drank half a bottle of this bad boy. And like normally, because of I've got two wine stores downstairs that charge at a minimum €19 for a bottle of wine.
What?
Yeah, I tend to be like, well, I've got expensive taste. This is the cheapest shit going. Fucking delicious. Gallo family. Gallo, baby.
I was going to say, Gav, did someone charge you 19 quid for a bottle of Gallo?
No. I think this is something we had from, I don't know when, but
from a shop run.
I haven't been able to leave the house because I'm isolating. So my Craft Central order didn't come in, and I've just had to drink what's around.
There you go. Look, if you need anything dropped off at the door, Gav.
Your corner of shame. I like it. You're starting to you really do only appreciate your corner of shame and your isolating episode title, potentially Gallo's Humor.
Not bad.
Good.
It won't make a lot of sense for most of the episode.
No, it's true. It won't.
But a lot of the titles don't make sense for a lot of the episode.
Good point. By the time I'm finished editing it, if I haven't remembered to write down what I think the title should be, I'm not listening to it a second time. So it'll just be like, what's one thing that we said that I can remember? Jesus. Oh, it can't be the thing we cheers to, because for some reason the beer nut asked us not to do that once. And I was like, sure, I'll never do that again. Yeah. I'll never have that be the same again. Since you asked politely. Yeah.
I fear that now that we're not as consistent with our beer reviews, the beer nut might not be listening anymore. That's my biggest fear.
That's actually
the only thing that worries me, keeps me up at night. Yeah.
Plus also, if he stops listening, who will tweet us to let us know that like I've forgotten to send a file or something and it's not up yet? Dave used to ring me, he doesn't anymore, so I can only assume we can insult him away, unlike we normally do. It's not destination viewing anymore, we have to admit that.
That's why we're in the harvesting phase, not the audience building phase.
Yeah, well, exactly, we say, yeah. We sold out to DAZN or DAZN or whatever it's called. A pretty penny it was too. It really only leaves us one thing to cheers to, and I suppose that is to destination viewing.
To destination viewing, which we...
And cut! Good enough. Splice in some reaction shots of me and shove it on the air.